Welcome to Federal Insights for June, Operational Resiliency Month, sponsored by Veritas.
Hello, and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. As the coronavirus touches every aspect of government, we thought we would take a look at how it's affecting military acquisition, in particular, the Navy. Though you may think there's plenty of space at shipyards for workers to practice social distancing, that wasn't the case for those providing strategic IT visions. To get a sense of how the branch is handling this new environment, we talked to Michael Sidla. He's the Division Director for Information Management, Resources, Logistics, Maintenance, and Industrial Operations at Naval Sea Systems Command Headquarters. He spoke with Federal News Network's Jason Miller.
COMNAVC, Naval Sea Systems Command, is one of the five system commands in the United States Navy. That means we are the ones that buy stuff. In particular, that's related to ships. So we are responsible for the planning of the purchase, planning of buying ships, buying the ships, maintaining the ships, and then disposing of them eventually. So that's very much what we do. It's about $30 billion annual command. So $30 billion kind of flows through the process at any given time. And then within our organization, the Industrial Ops, we are focused on sustaining those assets, in particular submarines, carriers, and surface fleet. And that's about $9.7 billion annual budget that we're responsible for. And then within that operation, which is worldwide, 24/7, my code and my responsibility with my team is sustaining the enterprise-wide systems, bringing new digital options to the table, and then cybersecurity. So I always like to say that naval maintenance, just like the British Empire, never sleeps. So wherever the sun rises, we're doing maintenance somewhere on some ship.
And that's pretty incredible when you talk about not just budget, but submarines, carriers, surface fleet. I'm not sure what's left out of that list that you guys don't deal with. But when you talk about an industrial ops, means what? I mean, just maybe put a finer point on it, just in case the audience isn't familiar with that term.
So. When we talk about industrial ops, I'm going to use your car as an analogy here. So we have three levels. We have operational level, we have intermediate level, and we have depot level. So operational level is if you took your car home, fix the oil, change the oil, maybe replace light bulb or something like that. That's the first step. And that's usually done by the sailors in the fleet. The second steps, the intermediate and depot, which is our RMCs, regional maintenance centers, our ship repair facility in Japan, or our naval shipyards, are kind of a little bit more complex. So the intermediate level means you've actually taken your car to the dealer, right? And they're doing normal maintenance on it, something you wouldn't do at home, replace the brakes, change the filters, those kind of things to bring it back up. Then the naval shipyards, which are our depots, they're doing a restoration and modernization on your car. So they are actually pulling the engine out, fixing the engine, doing any body work that needs to occur in that. And those actions. So that's what we're focused on. So my organization is mainly focused on the intermediate and the depot level. So lots of complex work going on. So right now at the naval shipyards, we have about 45,000 employees daily working on carriers and submarines, getting them up and ready to go for the nation.
And it's probably amazing how technology now plays into this effort every single day. A lot of people may not think about, well, you're welding or you're fixing. That's all now a technology piece. And then that's where your office, I'm sure, comes in to help out with that technology side, make sure the tools, the network, all those pieces and parts are working well.
Yeah, so it is a finely orchestrated dance of carrier availability. That's when we actually have the carrier come into dry dock and we start working on it. It has about 10,000 employees coming in and out on them at any given time. So we got to make sure that they're at the right place with the right tools, doing the right work, and it's been certified. Also, it can get out of that dry dock and back to the fleet as soon as we can. So it is technically impossible not to do this with the IT tools that we bring to the scheduling tools, the planning tools, material tools that we bring to the table. And so our goal as in part of this organization is not only just to keep what we're doing, but to increase the productivity of that workforce incredibly. If we can increase it by 20 to 30%, that's a big savings, but also more importantly, it gets those aircraft carriers or submarines back to the Navy to be deployed. And that's one of the things that we're always focused on, increasing productivity and sustaining what we have. And as you can see, we never have enough carriers or submarines in places to support the Navy mission or in particular protect the world.
I know based on, you know, previous reporting, there's always a push in Congress for, you know, we need a fleet of this size. We need 350 ships, or we need 350, you know, kind of assortment of vessels. Let's talk a little bit about your office too. How many federal employees do you have? Do you have uniformed men and women, contractors, civilians, and then roughly what's your IT budget for 2020?
Yeah. So we're going to break this into two parts. So there's the central organization that I'm directly responsible for. Then I have some field activities, and both of them together are what we need to execute this Navy the maintenance mission. Within my office, it's about $130 million annually that I get for IT. I have about 65 government employees that are working for me across the country in the IT program management roles, product delivery, acquisition, and then about 400 contractors doing sustainment operations and development. So it's a pretty robust staff. It's almost like a mid-size, smaller software development organization. And then when I go into the field activities of naval shipyards and RMCs, we have about another $100 million worth of just regular maintenance. And that's everything from sysadmins to cybersecurity professionals to just the help desk folks at the field, right? And so, and we're looking at a mix of about military and civilians in there, and about 400 to 500 people in total. So both contractors and government and military. And it really is one team because we've realized right now we can't treat them as contractors or government or military. It's just one team. This the enterprise solution has to be in place.
You have so many pieces and parts ongoing. You have submarines and ships and carriers and surface fleets that really need to be maintained, upgraded, changed out, and get ready to get back, you know, on the water to in the Navy's ships. And you have 45,000 employees working on all this effort. And then the coronavirus hits and you have to socially distance. And, you know, you really can't work from home if you're fixing parts of a ship or kind of upgrading technology systems that's on a ship. So walk me through, how has your office continued to kind of deal with this challenge, and while you also meet your mission of the pandemic?
Yeah, so for the shipyards, and I'm going to focus on the shipyards, because of the nature of the work, they are actually had to go back into the play, into the yards. And we did a lot of social distancing, and I'm not going to go into a lot of details because it's not my area of expertise, but the shipyard commanders and the shipyard employees, we worked together to socially distance. We started doing some interesting ideas. We took the folks that were what we call in the overhead positions, and we were able to let them start teleworking for the first time in many ways. In many ways, the coronavirus kind of exercised some opportunities that we've never explored before. Before, it was always everyone had to be next to each other. Then we started realizing we have collaboration tools out there. We can start working our engineering stuff offline, bringing our laptops home, working through a series of software collaborations tools out there. Meanwhile, the folks at the waterfront folks were actually back into the on the shipyards, working that mission, even though we were facing the coronavirus threat. And so they've done a really good job of isolating, protecting the workforce, but also, and more importantly, getting the ships out on time. And that's really where our mission, we're very mission focused. So as we go forward, it was interesting to watch what happened. A lot of things that we said we'd never do, we realized we could do, and we're now embracing that new change in technology. It's particularly the remote operations. It was something that I didn't think the mindset would ever change, because a lot of folks are like, I can't guarantee people are working unless I see them. Now that we've kind of brought these collaboration tools and the laptops and the mobility to the factor, a lot more ideas are popping up of, hey, we can go do this. We can do more distance support. We can actually do that. But at the end of the day, the folks that were on the waterfront, the mechanics, they did come back in, and we were still meeting that mission. And so we just did what we had to do, even though it was off hours, maybe at times.
What about your office specifically? Since you're running the IT side of this, you're ensuring the, as you mentioned, the program manager to maintain systems, oversee cyber policy, the whole digital transformation. Was all of that also moved remotely, or did you have to do some systems, some things had to be maintained on premise and with people in person?
So two things happened. So we actually, I was very impressed with my team. A lot of like our operations center and our software development was, we sent people home, and we had our virtual desktops, and we had those capabilities up and running within 24 hours. We used the managed service to get that action going. There was a couple people that had to come in to actually reboot servers and stuff, but most of the stuff we were able to start moving remotely. And so we were more and more moving similar to what the private sector has done in the past. Your sysadmin through secure means was able to access the servers, make sure they were up and running. Those tools that we had purchased and kind of been playing with for a time, we were able to engage with and get stuff moving. So from my organization's standpoint, we moved very rapidly. We were about 48 hours from, hey, we're not on the office, to back in where everyone's working at home or remotely, and to be almost a full up round again, which was really impressive. And it was a lot of the procurement tools we had purchased, but we're playing with, we realized, okay, it's time to move forward. One thing I will tell you, we within the Naval Shipyard community and the maintenance community was very resilient. And so we've had these plans in the past, we just had to go exercise them. And so that was one of the things that's really driven us to be successful even now.
Mike Sidla is with Naval Sea Systems Command. He's speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller there. We'll hear more from him after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
In today's era of more digital business, agencies combat malicious intent, data complexity, and other unknowns that could compromise your agency's operational resiliency. Mitigating these risks is paramount. With Veritas, agencies gain a dedicated partner to help ensure your organization's operational resilience with the most versatile and extensible platform on the market. Because in this era of more, no one addresses more scope, scale, and IT diversity than Veritas. Visit veritas.com/resiliency for additional information.
We continue our interview with Mike Sidla, Division Director for Information Management Resources at Naval Sea Systems Command Headquarters.
Mike, we started the conversation about how the Naval Sea Systems Command's industrial ops is surviving, if you will, during the pandemic emergency. One of the last things you mentioned was really the resiliency piece. And I think that's a really key place I want to start, because we hear often agencies and organizations talking about operational resiliency. How can we keep going? From a technology perspective and where you sit in your role, how did you guys help the NAVC really continue to meet its mission when it came to technology? You mentioned getting up in about 48 hours, but what other things have you had to do to ensure this resiliency over the last few months?
Yeah, so one of the key elements for us and for the broader organization that we support here, because like I mentioned before, it's 24/7. We've been working closely with our partners in the NAV War organization, POEIS, and NMCI in particular, expanding the VPN capability. That was one of the things that really was a shortfall for us, and they did an outstanding job of expanding the ability to VPN into secure networks. That was one of the first things. It seems like a no-brainer, but realizing that we were never really geared for the amount of teleworking we were doing, that was the first action we were doing. The second one was really getting and it seems somewhat embarrassing at times, actually getting the folks to get their laptops and the desktops off the yards into where they needed to be. And then finally is using some of the cloud collaboration tools that we had played with before, but we hadn't really exposed ourselves to. There were a lot of organizations that said, yeah, it's interesting to have a cloud collaboration tool set, and I'm not going to give anyone a commercial for it, but using those tools really started opening our eyes. So that passing that information back and forth, the simple things were really critical for us. In fact, just even starting using web cameras and for unsecure conversations and looking people in the eye was the other thing that was really helped the organization and culture in particular, that people weren't isolated during this time.
When you talk about the VPN piece, let's maybe start there. You had capabilities in place, but you had to go from 20% telework, 5% telework. What was the percentages to now, 90, 95% telework? And how did you make sure your VPN could handle that surge?
It was very much of an ad hoc telework. So we were probably at about 15%. At the naval shipyards themselves, we were probably in the low 1 to 2 to 3% thing. And we've spun up to about 40 to 50% of the workforce kind of teleworking on some kind of basis. So for particular for us working with 205, which is the NMCI program office, it was getting those requirements up, and they were standing up additional capabilities across the nation so we can VPN. So they have expanded rapidly from, I'm just going to say a rough number, about 60,000 access points to well over 100 that really kind of fit for the entire Navy. So that's really the key element for us there.
And let me take it down another level, because you mentioned that your office is supporting the workers in the shipyard, the workers who are repairing and upgrading ships. And could that support, you said, could that be done remotely, or did you have to have some people in the office? And so, was there a resiliency piece there?
Yeah, so we had some of the actions could be redone remotely, and that was one of the biggest change for us too, is making sure we had the right cybersecurity tools to access securely those networks. So that was occurring. But unfortunately, because some of the nature of the work, we actually had folks coming into the office, socially isolating and wearing the mask and washing their hands, just because of the nature of the production environments.
That's Mike Sidla from Naval Sea Systems Command Headquarters, talking there with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. Hear the final part of our interview after one more break. I'm Eric White.
In today's era of more digital business, agencies combat malicious intent, data complexity, and other unknowns that could compromise your agency's operational resiliency. Mitigating these risks is paramount. With Veritas, agencies gain a dedicated partner to help ensure your organization's operational resilience with the most versatile and extensible platform on the market. Because in this era of more, no one addresses more scope, scale, and IT diversity than Veritas. Visit veritas.com/resiliency for additional information.
You're listening to part three of our interview with Mike Sidla, Division Director for Information Management Resources at Naval Sea Systems Command Headquarters. He spoke with Federal News Network's Jason Miller.
You mentioned this idea of creating kind of some safe space to do some experimentation. What else can you tell me about what they're looking at? Maybe there's the one at your shipyard, and how is it going to work? Is it a safe space like a sandbox or a cloud? Give me a sense of how this is coming together.
Yeah, so at each of the four shipyards, we've been designated little innovation teams. And so what their charters are, hey, don't do business as normal, right? How can we increase productivity? So those teams are looking at a wide range of technologies, and both in the physical space and the digital space too. Things that we're really kind of focusing on is, how do we improve training? Right now, before a ship comes in, we actually do a physical mock-up so the folks can walk around and see what the action is going. So we started looking at, hey, what's that mean if we do a digital realm, right? Using commercial off-the-shelf technology, what if we take the digital twin of the ship and actually do have the employees walk around so they can actually see what the submarine looks like, be in it, even though it hasn't shown up yet. Work the packages, especially when it's a big advantage when we have the less experienced folks coming into a submarine for the first time, they're doing maintenance. So now they know what's going on. When we talk about the safe space, we're really talking about working to use Navy-approved paths so they can actually bring technology in, play with it, see if it makes sense or doesn't make sense. So we've talked about a little bit about the 3D, entering the 3D animation world, kind of that. We're starting to look at other technologies similar to using robots, using automated kitting, those kind of technologies that we haven't used before. And then we'll talk a little bit in the future, potentially, of it using AI and machine learning. Lots of capabilities that we haven't really touched there that we're focusing on in the next couple of years. Those are the safe space we're talking. And so there's two parts of that too. It's always the, hey, this is a great new, cool new technology, but we're also kind of focusing, the second question is, which part of the organization is going to sustain it? Because we really don't want to just go have a new technology that's not really embedded into the culture. And that's the second part of the what we're talking with the innovation crowd. They come and identify the technology, they play with it, say, yeah, this makes sense. Then we actually try to figure out how we're going to make sure it's sustained long-term and how it's fitted into our business processes. So those are the kind of things we're working on locally at the area. And then all the technology that goes along supporting that, because everything today has some kind of IT tail to it. And we really want to make sure it's cyber safe, or it's secure, and the technology is easily maintained as we move forward. Those are kind of things that we're focusing on a day-to-day basis and working that. And so the other interesting thing I've discovered is it's not the traditional IT crowd that's really pushing forward on this innovation stuff. It's engineers, folks that are actually working on the ships that come in and said, hey, can we do this? I think I Googled something online and saw there's a technology. Can we bring this in? And those are the things we're working on a constant basis too.
And that's hugely important because you're listening to the users. I mean, we love to talk about user-centered design and agile development and all those key buzzwords, but having that place where the users can say to your technology experts, I need something to help me with this problem or help me solve this challenge, I think that is key. And it sounds to me like it's not something you all always did for decades and decades. This is something that maybe popped up as we all, from a technology perspective, started to focus on the user community more.
Yeah, and that's key. There was always those rebels out there. Being in whatever command information officer you are, you always have the folks pushing the boundaries. So it's something falling on your network, you're like, oh my God, where did that come from? But trying to get them an opportunity and harness that energy has been really important for the naval shipyards and the rest of the community of driving us forward. That kind of action is just important because, like I said, we only have a limited number of ships, and any way we can figure out how to make anyone more productive and get those ships and submarines back out faster to the fleet is key for us. That's really the mission that we're focused on. How can we get product assets back to the fleet so they can go do their mission? And I think that's one of the critical aspects we do. And the only way we're going to be successful is embracing more technology to help us speed up.
Speaking of embracing more technology, one of the things you also mentioned among your IT modernization strategy was these 28 core apps and modernizing them. Have you all been through a app rationalization process? Do you know kind of a priority list? Walk me through how you're going about that modernization.
Yeah, so we've been through the traditional application rationalization idea. One of the things that we've identified, those core apps, instead of talking just like IT, we're really, I focus my team and the end users of what is the output we need. So we understand that the core area that we need a tool that does planning, right? So we've looked at the tools that we have out there and we said, okay, does it do what it needs to do today? What would be better? And we started focusing on that technology, bringing the end users in to say, hey, what's the next step? The vision really is, and if we do this right, moving away from that traditional IT project manager into what you see in the private sector of a digital product manager, right? So they are actually doing the market surveys, in this case, our end users, on a constant basis, understanding what they really need to do their job, and then are already anticipating what the next technology change is for those core functions that we're doing, the planning, the ordering of material, the scheduling of human resources, making sure the training's in place, all those kind of things that we're kind of moving away from that traditional IT project manager into more of a digital product manager that has ownership over that capability that we want to bring to the table. And that's all throughout the thing. And one of the other things that I wanted to mention is that in the cultural shift that we're doing, because buying just IT is kind of the easy part. We can buy servers, we can buy software stuff. It's actually working with the customer. So you mentioned agile earlier and human-centric design. Those are great buzzwords when they're just within the IT community. They're really successful, and I've discovered is when we bring the end user in and they have the same acronym. So we're teaching them, we're doing an agile development project. They're fully engaged on it. It's not just, hey, here's my requirements and walk away. That's one of the biggest challenges I've had is changing the culture of how we do development and procure IT. And that's really what I'm kind of excited about seeing because people, it's starting to grow. The idea of even agile outside the IT realm is starting to grow. Human-centric design, all those kind of ideas are kind of boiling up, and we're starting to see it not just from our internally to the IT community, but actually operators and users too.
You've been listening to our interview with Mike Sidla, Division Director for Information Management Resources, Logistics, Maintenance, and Industrial Operations at Naval Sea Systems Command Headquarters. If you missed any part of this interview, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for June, Operational Resiliency Month, sponsored by Veritas on Federal News Network.